Okay, welcome to the fourth of our new retooled, all exciting Deep Analysis podcast. Myself here in the UK and Alan in Philadelphia again today. If it's the first time you've joined us, I will run through the format. The format is very simple and it is on the screen for those of you who are watching this in video format. Three topics, 30 minutes. We try to keep to about 10 minutes a topic. Trying to keep us on track can be a little bit difficult. I'll start my stopwatch so I know I'm keeping my eye on the time. And we'll get going with the first of today's topics. It's quite self-referential today, but that's good because, you know, we do good stuff and it's a good time for us to talk about it. And we've added some new research updates. So there's some research updates and then there's some updates about the research as well in this first kind of section. So we've added four new vendor vignettes, vendor profiles, if you want to take a more generic approach to them. For Alan and I to go through.
Yeah, and on that, if anybody's got a better name, they should let us know. Vendor vignettes, I don't know. I don't even remember how we came up with the name for them. I don't know why. I don't know. It's a little pretentious, isn't it? But whatever.
a little pretentious? Moi?
Yeah.
So first up is Bot Minds, which I know something that a vendor that you've spoken to at length, Alan. What are the highlights beyond someone actually reading the VV that they need to come to and see and read the Bot Minds one?
You know, so let me put this in the most diplomatic way possible.
There's so
many of these vendors, right? So many of them. So before sort of touching on Bot Minds itself, I think I've got to give a little bit of context here, right? I mean, Dan could give better context for sure. But, you know, I think we've mentioned this before on a podcast, but, you know, we have a list of over 300 IDP vendors.
I mean, yes.
How long is the real list, right? Because, I mean, that's our internal list, right? So hundreds and hundreds of them. And so we can't write about all of them. It's not possible. So we try and pick the ones that really are doing a very, very good job, right? Or they're doing something new. And what you tend to find with these IDP vendors is one side of the equation or the other is weaker. And the equation being the sort of the capture side of it, as we would have called it traditionally, and then the automation side of it, right? Because some of them, to be fair, really just focus on the capture side, right? You know, that's what they do and they do it really well. And you do all the automation yourself or with somebody else. Bot Minds is one of those that sort of seems to have got this balance really well in the sense that, you know, they're doing the data capture, but it's surrounded by a lot of really good functionality from analytics and automation and search, you know. So it's a broader approach than many others, for one thing. And, you know, not something we can really go into on a podcast, but if people are interested in them, and this is not an endorsement, by the way, but if people are interested in them, really easy to use. And ease of use, everybody claims their tool is easy to use. Everybody. Mm-hmm. And then they bring up a 1990-style Windows 10.
I think often what they mean, Alan, it's easy for them to use.
It's easy for them to use, yeah. And then you bring it up and you go, that's not easy. Bot Minds of many of them, I wouldn't say of all of them, that's an exaggeration, but certainly one of the more intuitive, maybe most intuitive. I'll go a step further. So yeah, that's Bot Minds. Very interesting player.
And now the Hyperscience, who seem to be doing fantastically well from a not out of nowhere, but another one of those European vendors who then kind of re-established or re-HQ'd themselves in the US, probably for sensible reasons, seems to be doing pretty well.
Yeah, Hyperscience is doing very well. In fact, you know, it's funny, I was on my travels, right, for five, 6 weeks or whatever. And whenever people were talking to me about the sort of the new IDP startups, well, first of all, they were shocked to find out there's over 300.
Yeah.
But if they'd heard of any of them, you can guarantee Hyperscience was one of them. If not, I'd have to say it was probably the one that everybody'd heard of. So, yeah, they're doing very well. And I'm mentioning the brand here because that's what's a bit unusual, if you know what I mean, is that a startup can get that kind of brand visibility. I mean, yeah, they raised a lot of money. But you and I know plenty of companies who've raised a lot of money and nobody's heard of them.
Absolutely, yes.
So, you know, so yeah, and I think what's interesting about hyperscience, I think we've got it here in the intro, is that transitioned, right? They've done a transition, and they have spotted something we've talked about a lot, that that document capture, as we would have called it, Harvey Spencer would have called it capture 2.0, whatever you want to call it, is actually a largely untapped market.
Yeah.
Whereas the perception is that it's a mature and saturated market. It's not.
So it's, basically, the ability to do things has increased, whereas the broad capabilities of the incumbent hasn't.
Yeah. So you've got two. Yeah, that's right. There's two sides to it, isn't it? Two factors, maybe, is a better way of saying it. Two factors to it. One is, frankly, the technology today, yes, largely AI, machine learning driven, almost exclusively machine learning, AI driven, is faster and more accurate, and it can do more, right? Yeah. It actually sort of, I don't like using human terms with technology, but it can actually sort of read and understand. We're not just talking, you know, oh, that's the letter T, or that's the word organization. I mean, it can actually, you know, so we've got a level of sophistication here that we didn't have before.
Yeah.
But it's not just that it can do the old job better. It's that suddenly there's a lot more use cases for it.
Yeah. And I think one interesting, and certainly if you're super into IDP, I want to go further. Dan has literally a few days ago put out the four ages of IDP. I will put the links into the show notes, and I will hopefully for the next podcast drag Dan on to go through and enlighten you all with his view of how we got to where we got to. I mean, I certainly got a lot of reaction last time from Dan's IDP thing on I think two episodes ago he came on and did that. I wanted to come on again and do some more, because I think it's an area, certainly for us, that generates a vast amount of our inquiry and visitors is IDP. Yeah, it's an area of technology that for most people is kind of transparent.
It is a fascinating area, and I always look at it and I just think back, God, I don't even know, Matt, over 15 years ago, that much I'd say, but I do remember being at an AIM leadership conference, and the reason I remember it was Albuquerque. I'd never been to Albuquerque, and there was a bunch of capture vendors, and they were saying, why don't industry analysts cover the capture market, blah, 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 and they were having a real go at me. I was on this panel. And I said to them, because there's no money in it. I mean, that's the reality. Analyst companies aren't charities, okay? I mean, there's got to be a substantial market for them to cover. And that's really, honestly, why nobody's really covered it. Gartner never really covered it. Forrester never really covered it. Oven, when Oven was a big deal, never covered it. You really just had, like, specialists like Harvey Spencer. He was pretty much the end of the story. It's massive now. Mm-hmm. And that's all happened in the last 5 years.
So talking of things which there's not a huge amount of coverage on, IPWE.
Do you know what? Purely from an approach and standpoint, I have to take my hat off to IPWE. And we did. We gave them an innovation award.
So give us a 30-second IPWE pitch. Let's pretend you're product marketing for IPWE, and you want to give us a 30-second, because it's conceptually relatively simple.
Yeah, but that's what's cool.
Yes.
That's what's cool. So basically, think about it. I did a consulting project years ago with, a big organization that manages millions and millions of patents, right? And there are the patent world is so massive. Right. I mean, there's millions and millions and millions and millions of patents every year, and they're valuable.
Yes.
That's an asset, right? An intellectual property, a patent is worth serious money. And it's a massive industry, essentially, managing intellectual property, but particularly patents. IPWE was founded by a sort of legend in the industry, in the patent industry. Patent market sector, then can't really call it an industry, right? And came up with pretty much the point that, look, let's pull them all into one place. It's actually possible to do that. Let's use AI, because there's a hell of a lot of this stuff. So let's use AI to be able to know what we've got, manage it and access it and search it. and let's use blockchain so that we can actually lock these things down and make them immutable. And from that, they have a business, right? And the business is basically buying and selling patents. And there's more to it than that. But, you know, there's a world of people out there who own portfolios of patents. And they've built a platform that, again, it's pretty straightforward, very straightforward to use, actually.
So right? We're talking about a real tangible use for enterprise blockchain.
Exactly.
And I think we should come back to that as a topic for a future pod. I need to move on a little bit for now onto the last of the updates here, which is Scan, which is one of our work intelligence vendors, particularly in the process and task mining area. So we're going to go on to our next topic. So some thought about what order to do these. And Scan's a kind of interesting one because one of the areas that we looked at when we were talking about this area predominantly earlier this year was the need to start operationalizing the understanding of how processes work on a day-to-day basis rather than making them something you do when you do an automation project and then once you throw them away, the monitoring of that, it becomes a sort of a part of what you work every day. And they've raised, at least in this market, reasonably chunky amount of money. They're one of the better funded vendors in this area. And I think if you were, looking at the work intelligence vendors we had earlier on, and we're still talking to those, and we're still working on the updates for those but already working on next year's market forecast for that. That's an area, I think, that's certainly a vendor and area to continue to look into in more detail, which interestingly, looking at the sort of next topic, and actually something that you wrote, Alan, as a result of your travels. We're not doing a travelogue where in Europe you've been this time, but we're now into the kind of knock-on effects of some of the things that you discovered and conversations you had along the way. And one of those was you're going to talk about work intelligence to people, and particularly talking about process mining and task mining, and maybe a little bit about communications mining too. And people are saying to you, "We've got no idea what you're talking about, Alan. What are you talking about? Why are you telling us this? Can you?"
I know. Interesting. By the way, Matt, I wish I was in Europe right at the moment, because we've got the smoke in Philly, right? We've got the smog. 361 on the air quality index, which I've been told by both my daughter and wife this morning not to go outside, Alan.
Okay.
Because it's hazardous. But this is the thing. So, nobody knew what the heck I was talking about. Well, that's not a particularly novel experience for me. But what was worrying here is a lot of these people were process analysts, right? These were people, I'm using the term broadly, but actually in some cases, literally, that was their job title. Sorry.
Do you mean, but basically, it's a polite way of saying these are people who should have known about it, is what you think.
You'd think. But they hadn't. And I will give you one example very quickly. I was at the DSF event in Charlotte and doing this sort of this topic, process and task mining, basically. And I brought up two screenshots, right? One from Apramore A, and one from UiPath. And people were just like, whoa. I mean, okay. And they're right to say, whoa, because I know something about process analysts. That's why I did one, before I was an industry analyst. It's really hard. It's hard work, right? Here's something that automates 50, 60, 70% of the work. That's game changer. That's absolutely massive, right? And yet, nobody's heard of them. So again, there's clearly a massive untapped market here. We were on a call yesterday. I know you're writing up about UiPath, right? And their tools. So there's plenty going on, but it's a reminder that because we in the bubble, if you like, know all about this stuff and talk about it all the time, the big wide world doesn't, right? So whatever the market is now, plenty more out there.
So for us, it's a very much of a double-edged thing, because of course we will be happier if the whole world was talking about this, because we're one of the very few analyst companies that really invested significantly in research in this area. And I believe we're the only people who've got a really defensible market forecast from this. So if it was more popular, more people would buy that, which would be good for us.
It would.
The other half of it is that actually, if I look at the kind of where we predicted this market would be, and this is a just a little bit of data that came out of our Work Intelligence Market Analyst report from earlier this year, where we were predicting where some of the sub parts of the work intelligence market would be over the next 5 or 6 years. Just to give you an idea for those of you who haven't seen it, when we're talking about work engines, they're very much the sort of traditional BPM and workflow things. Programmatics is very much low code, no code, that kind of making stuff. Task execution is very much kind of the RPA, those kind of things. And mining intelligence is our kind of wrapper for task mining, process mining, and communications mining. Now, what you can see on screen is they're all growing. They're growing at different rates. But actually, the mining intelligence stuff doesn't really start to hit pay dirt if you're a vendor. Probably an R thing until 2025. In fact, that's actually dragged along by increased revenue, particularly for task execution for the RPA vendors. So when we were talking to yesterday UiPath, and we're saying people aren't seeing this a lot, and they go, "Yeah, we're doing more money, but still, most people haven't heard of it." It's actually going to be the likes of UiPath who are probably going to drag mining intelligence a little bit into the mainstream, which is kind of what we're predicting from the numbers we've got on screen.
Yeah, and for those who are just listening to the podcast, I mean, I'll just give you a comparison here. You know, the traditional like workflow BPM, BPA market, I mean, it's continuing to grow and it's still the biggest, right? Mm-hmm. But it's growing at a much slower pace, right? Much, much, much slower pace to the others. And mining intelligence is growing at a really fast pace, but from a really low base in the first place, right? The thing is here, you've got two sides to the whole mining stuff, right? So you've got UiPath, you've got SAP, for example, and they'll say, "Oh, well, we've got that stuff and we'll bundle it in." And Microsoft, right? They've got it too.
Yep.
And so you'll see that. And that makes perfect sense if you're UiPath, SAP, Microsoft customer. It makes perfect sense. But there's also a healthy market, I think, for the independents, right? Because these are tools that tell you what's going on. You may not want to do a project. You may not want to buy any more licenses. You may just want to know what the heck's going on in your organization. And so, you know, there's what they do is process analysis, or task analysis too. But what anybody who's done that for a living can tell you, that activity is undertaken for a lot of different reasons.
Yeah.
And it's not always because, hey, we're going to install some new software.
Absolutely. And we tend to look at where, let's say, an RPA vendor, task execution in our work intelligence kind of language, why would they be interested in process mining and task mining? Well, it's to create a pipeline for new projects to use RPA. It might not just be to sell more bots. It may be to get a better utilization out of the bots you have, but it's very much directed at that.
Yeah,
so,
and by
so
the
it's
way,
not likely to be your only point of recommendation is not going to be somebody whose mining solutions are very closely tied to their RPA, right? It may be that's what you want, but it may be, hey, I've actually got 4 or 5 different RPA solutions. I want something which is agnostic of those, so I can judge those across my entire suite.
Yeah, and by the way, there's nothing wrong with that approach from people like UiPath, right? Because you know, they've shown us some examples and that, but logic tells you what's going to happen is when you do this work, you're going to find out you're in a much bigger mess than you thought you were. That's sort of par for the course. But hey, we could fix this little thing here. We could fix that little thing there. We could do this. We could do that. And you can get some measurable benefits. So, I mean, potentially it really is a win-win for both the customer and the vendor. And that's a good thing.
And the fact they got feet in both task and process, off the top of my head, Microsoft, through Mine and Softmotive, I've got something very similar. Both of them are facing the same kind of thing, which is, we've got these one or two or three tenants of mining tools here. They're very separate. So you almost need to look at the outputs of the three, analyze them. They're not able really to take the approach at the same time.
That's the perfect.
We'll get there. We'll get there. And I think it's the idea at the moment is they almost come from two ways of thinking. If you talk to those people who've been in process mining for a while, they will tell you task mining can't do this. Task mining people will tell you, well, process mining has limitations. So we're coming from kind of slightly antagonistic camps. So the fact that they've never crossed over before is almost as a result of they were different approaches to the same thing.
And I think they sometimes are different approaches. I think, you know, it depends on the organization. I mean, there are certainly organizations who are running really old IT stacks and you know, they've got a call center full of people who are hopping from screen to screen to screen, right? Mm-hmm. You could use either approach. Mm-hmm. The task mining there would be the logic, right? Let's figure out how these people are actually struggling and working their way through a problematic sort of situation to deal with the customer. So I think they do independently all have value as standalone. Mm-hmm. One, but for big projects, it would be nice to use all three at some future point. But I think that's an architectural challenge for most vendors.
So anyway, for there's already a report available on Microsoft's process tools, which we released earlier this year. The one on UiPath will be out a little bit later on. Something we didn't cover a little bit about is some of those research updates about how those updates will be sort of carried in the future for subscribers. Yeah,
and I mean, the reality is this research, I mean, don't get me wrong, there's still going to be plenty of free stuff, the analyst notes, the podcasts, etc. But yeah, it's going to be accessed by subscribers in the future. It's just a business decision. We've been putting it off for a long time.
So basically, the headline here is, if you're a subscriber, you're getting loads more exclusive stuff than you got before, for no extra money.
That's absolutely, I hadn't thought about it that way.
Well, there you go. That's why I used to be in the commercial side of the industry, right? Yeah. I'm thinking the value prop here, Alan.
It's true. No, it's true.
So onto our third topic. And look, we did try to get into this without talking about more AI. However, if we look at what we've been talking about in our, what we used to basically call the analyst room in Google Chat, it's again been 80% of it has been AI and AI related, and only a third of this pod is AI. So actually, we've probably spending less time on this than collectively Alan and I and Dan and colleagues are right now. What we're trying to do, and we're getting a lot of press inquiries, which is really nice because it's nice to see somebody else writing for a change, not us having to write. So we're seeing a lot of these. We talked about it previously about how LLMs are starting to appear in other applications. This was an example of Automation Anywhere and something that they announced last week. So very much the kind of bring your own license, bring your own models kind of approach, which is really the kind of pragmatic approach that we're seeing from vendors about it. And this is very much couched in the real world, which is we've got real applications, we've got real LLMs that you can do something with today. And I think that's really interesting to talk about, and we've talked about it a lot. And of course, the other side of that is the end of the world is coming. AI is going to destroy the end of the world faster than nuclear war, which is happening simultaneously and probably isn't enormously helpful for those of us who are trying to couch this into reality and encourage people not to have the pants scared off them. And I lost my cool. I sat down last week and went, I think I need to try and separate out a little bit between AI, what's really important regulation, and the kind of predictions of doom. And I put out an analyst note that will continue to be available for free for everybody who wants from our sites in the future. And it's a good way of surfacing kind of what we're thinking of right now. We're saying actually there's a kind of a big dichotomy for us because we want people to understand our technology better. In fact, we were just talking about how not enough people understand processing and task mining yet. Yet the moment when this gets mainstream and actually goes into the national and international news, it's sort of skewed towards doom and gloom. So as I said in this article, there's lots of careers in AI. Predicting doom is just one of them.
Yeah, but I think, if we focus in, I mean, we talk about this a lot internally and externally, but, what does deep analysis do, right? It focuses on the automation of unstructured data. That's our world, mm-hmm. right? And how does all of this impact that world? How does all of this impact vendors who are building and selling tools to do contract analysis or mortgage process or whatever, right? It's really having an impact on, and it's really not a good time, because on the one hand, yes, every vendor is going to announce an integration with GPT or whatever, and so they should, right? Mm-hmm. You know, that from even purely from a marketing stance, sure, do
it. Of course, you've got to be compliant.
But the problem is, we were always talking about the sort of chasm between what vendors think and what buyers think, right? Uh-huh. Buyers, yeah, needs, vendors' visions. This chasm's huge. Certainly, there are pockets where people are, you know, where end user organizations are already starting to explore this and firing people, and we're going to hear those stories. But mm-hmm. the problem here is that most of our world of information management, unstructured data management, it doesn't, right? Mm-hmm. It's low risk stuff. We just talked about automating repetitive tasks, right? Yeah. And this is going to, and I believe already is, just making people more and more cautious. So I don't know if I'm allowed to talk about it, so I have to be careful. But I'm on the board of AIM, and so there's you know, AIM's involved in some of this stuff, right? And the US, for example, is falling behind the rest of the world in the adoption of these technologies. Mm-hmm. And I'm not saying it's all down to this, but it just screams risk.
Yeah.
It just screams high risk. And
at a time economically when we are probably more encouraged to be risk averse because of not having large amounts of money to do experiments with.
Culturally as well, right? And the problem with things like GPT is, yes, they are brilliant. Yeah, they are amazing advancements, right? But no, they're not that brilliant. You know what I mean? I mean, like, you know, they've been mm-hmm. overhyped. That happens all the time. But if you think of GPT, it suffers, and its ilk, because it's not the only one. It suffers from basically a twin deficit, right, of sort of understanding and truth, right? It's not as intelligent as people think, right? We've talked about this a lot. It doesn't genuinely understand anything, right? Mm-hmm. It's a tool. And secondly, it's got a habit of lying. And you take that to a big enterprise, an oil and gas company, a pharmaceutical company, a major legal firm. Those aren't strong selling points.
No, you're right. And I think, I mean, it's something that to try and turn my rant into something which was actually, you know, demonstrably useful or produce an actionable insight, I think, is what we're trying to find some of our analyst notes, is that it reminded me very much of the search engine market pre-Google. And I'm not saying that Google's a great search engine, and in many ways it's not, but that period, there were a number that were good for some things. Then you ended up with meta search engines like Dogpile that say, hey, I'm going to take your query, I'm going to run it past this 6 or this 8. I'm going to give you the results because you know that AltaVista is really good for this, but Lycos is better for that. I'll allow you to interpret those. So I'm wondering in the short term where we're taking, there are a variety of different generalized models which may or may not be good, but organizations yet don't have the skill or the money or the commitment to start getting into bespoke, that actually seeing kind of, you know, meta searches, and therefore, I guess at the same time, meta prompting. So engines are able then to turn the prompt into something which is appropriate for those general models and say, here's a selection. Here's what Bard says. Here's what OpenAI says. You can then synthesize that as the human in the loop to come up with the best result yourself, whether that's actually in the medium term where we'll see this being used.
Yeah, I've been an industry analyst about as long as anybody in the industry, right? The big things, one of the biggest things you learn as an analyst is the hype cycles, right? You've just mm-hmm. really taken with a pinch of salt. In our predictions for 2023, which we wrote in sort of, I think we started writing them sort of September time, October time, right, last year. One of those was LLMs are going to be like, you know, a big thing this year. Mm-hmm. Well, we didn't know they'd be this big. Mm-hmm. And every hype cycle is like this. People say, oh, no, This time it's different.
Mm-hmm.
No, it's not. This technology is amazing. The transformers, the large language model, it's amazing technology. But it is going to take years and years for it to settle down and find its place and for people to adopt it and get over the trust issues. And like all AI, we've said this repeatedly, like all AI, if you don't have good data, you're not going to get good results. And most enterprises don't have good data. So there's just real world practicality. So we're not trying to sort of say this isn't a big deal. It is. But it ain't changing the world overnight.
So our summary is be cool and look after your ugly data. Make your ugly data pretty and be cool.
It should be our catchphrase. We love ugly data because we
awesome. Well, on that note, that's our 30 minutes. So that was three topics in 30 minutes. Next time, unsurprisingly, you know the format by now, three more topics, 30 minutes to discuss them in. So thank you very much for joining us for one or all of those topics this time. And hopefully you'll hang around for our next edition. Thank you ever so much.
Thank you. Bye.